The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now we'll move on to the papers, and there's a lot to get through this morning. I'm joined by Cillian Woods, senior business reporter with the Sunday Business Post, and Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland. A very good morning to both of you.
Morning. Good morning.
Thanks for making your way in on this gorgeous sunny morning.
Coolest part of the day.
We have a fair amount to get through. Will we stay on the weather for a moment? Because as glorious as it is, as Cathal said, there are concerns.
Yeah, and I think we were talking before about how people just maybe aren't used to dealing with this sort of weather and dealing with the, like, even where you should put your dog and not walk your dog during the day. That's something I have a dog and you're mindful of. And I saw people were sharing that yesterday on Instagram, but, you know, this is just not the time of the day to be out walking your dog, to be early and or in the evening, or even just not leaving your dog alone in the house if it's going to just cook in there, because that's what we're maybe not used to in Ireland is our houses are built for keeping the heat in. So if it gets in, it can be very hard to get it out.
Yes. And actually, for the first time, I was driving through Dalgany, where I come from, this morning, and it was 6:30, and I've never seen so many people walking dogs. So people are obviously, Cillian, very mindful of the fact that it's going to be too hot later in the day.
Yeah, and that's what I was, that's the diktat I sent to my wife this morning, is that she needs to let the dog out, walk the dog before I get home.
Stretch the legs. Dog as well.
I live in Galway, so I'm going to be driving through that Athlone hot spring.
Oh, yes, that is the hot spot, isn't it? Yeah. Other concerns to be mindful of, Michelle?
Well, actually, I think in all the papers today, particularly the Mail and the Irish Independent, just in terms of water safety as well, which is really important. We saw that tragedy from the River Shore yesterday, you know, and that,
that tragic news, 12-year-old girl.
Yeah. And, you know, at this time of year when it is so warm, it's important that people understand water safety, how to keep themselves safe. Also to stay indoors between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m, which, as all of us know, when we go abroad, it's always the Irish people you see out between 11 and 3, and all of our continental neighbours are staying in the shade.
But so they do it so well, don't they? They disappear in those really hot hours. They close their shops. They go. They do siesta. They do it really well.
And I suppose we have to be mindful of this too. Well, actually, no, there's 4 big matches this weekend, 2 in Croke Park today, 2 in Croke Park tomorrow. So it's going to be full on both days. So, but just for people going in, spectators, to have enough water, sunscreen, but then also for the players as well, there are going to be extra water breaks in Croke Park as well. But, you know, just to be mindful of that too, depending on where you are, you could be sitting in that hot sun all afternoon.
There's another piece in the Indo today, which is interesting. Melanie Finn has a piece about SPF isn't a luxury. And it's a businesswoman, obviously. You know, she's going to say that. Obviously, she has an SPF brand, I assume. But, I mean, I'm fine at doing it, but the likes of my parents, I still have to remind them to use SPF all the time.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it's so important when you're working outdoors. And it was an interesting point, but I suppose that's the thing when it comes to VAT. Actually, people don't realise there's not a lot of room for manoeuvre or discretion, you know, and it's about the VAT rate on SPF and, you know, looking at a European level, should be looking for some sort of dispensation so it should be cheaper basically to sell in pharmacies, because it is, I suppose, when you think about it in this weather. And if, you know, if we are going to be looking at hotter weather going forward, we do need to look at the price of things like that, because it is
priced as kind of a luxury, isn't it, rather than an essential. It's not something you can just throw
in
your trolley.
Is there no like budget brands for it?
Well, I suppose you can get cheaper supermarket grants, but I guess you need to be able to check the label to see, does it have UBA, all the things you're supposed to know and understand.
And, you know, Michelle, that's a good point, because that changes every single year. There's something else that we should be looking out for, isn't there?
There is. And especially if you've young children, very small children, or people with sensitive skin or allergy, you know, you're going to have to get that different brand, which is generally more expensive.
It's that reassuringly expensive thing, you know, and you know you've bought the expensive one, it must have everything in it. Anyway, let's move to the presidential nominations, because that is across the papers today. Cillian, talk to us about the runners and the riders and what's happening there.
I think it looks like Catherine O'Connolly now is emerging as probably one of the main candidates. She's on the front page of the Irish Times today. There's profiles here in the Irish Independent of her by Senator Maloney on page 7. Cormac O'Quinn was the one who had the story yesterday, and Galway City Tribune that had the actual story yesterday of her running. Looks like she's emerging as probably the favourite at this stage. Okay. There's obviously other candidates who are vying for two. Mairead McGuinness will probably now get the Fine Gael nomination for it. Fianna Fáil are tiptoeing around. Maybe will they run a candidate? Fine Gael do. They probably will. We imagine the likes of Peter Casey will probably get a nomination through the councils, but it's unlikely to see others.
Has that been confirmed yet?
No, because that whole, well, I mean, he's he has confirmed he's going to try and get the nomination. He's interested in doing it. Now, then he has to follow through and show him to the councils or getting Oireachtas members, but most likely the councils, to get the approval of four to actually go and run for president. I imagine he would get that. There'd be sympathetic votes there. But it's unclear if there's anyone else who would actually go that route or be even successful going that council route. It's very tricky. After the local elections the other year, last year, that they actually now... Fianna Gael and Fianna Fáil do control a lot of the councils, so Sinn Féin, if not the two Fianna Gael and Fianna Fáil parties. So we're kind of looking at a limited race, maybe four to five people. Unless, like, I think we're all waiting for, well, not we're all, there's some parties maybe waiting for this Mary McAleese style candidate to just emerge, which is what happened when she did got the Fianna Fáil ticket, or got the Fianna Fáil vote. It's just emerged. I don't see it happening. I get quite exercised here, but the presidential election does get me quite annoyed about how this is all going.
Oh, we love exercise, Killian. Work away.
I think it shows a massive disrespect for the office, how the main parties, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, how this is, the papers reflects their disrespect for it. In the fact that they don't have candidates, and there's people, you know, I think it's Pat the Cope Gallagher now and Donegal is now flirting with, maybe I'll go for it. That, like, this is not a sudden succession plan. We know when all the rest of the presidential elections are going to happen, and none of them have been either cohesive enough to plan for it. I say the left United parties with that as well, that the parties of the left in the government, they've been thinking about going behind Francis Black, and that was mooted since January and that never happened. Maybe they'll go behind Catherine Connolly now, although there was a line in the paper that Labour see her as too left, which is that just breaks your heart a little bit that they would even think like that. But
party.
I think it's pathetic that they don't have candidates. And again, it's bad for their parties that I think Sean Kelly's backed out of a vote. Like, that's now two significant positions in Fine Gael, where there was Simon Harris, essentially a free run at Taoiseach when he succeeded in lieu of Raghur. And now, no contest, it looks like, for their president. Yeah. These are important positions that there's no one going for.
And are they just not taking it seriously? What do you think, Michelle?
Well, Mary Regan has a very interesting piece in the Irish Independent on this, looking at, I suppose, Fianna Fáil. And she asks a really interesting question. Like, what space can Fianna Fáil claim to occupy if it's not going to run a candidate in the presidential election? You know, and I think that's a really valid point. Like, how can you say you're representing your cohort of the electorate if either you don't see it as important enough to run a candidate? I mean, sure, it's a big enough party. You've had, as Killian said, you've had plenty of time to plan for a candidate. You know, we have we've heard one member declare herself over the airwaves. Now we have another member who's declared, well...
That's right, Mary Hanavan, sorry, she obviously declared.
Declaring himself, you know, to the local news in the Northwest, the Tyrconnell Tribune, actually. But, I mean, it says a lot, really, that, you know, they haven't got sort of a front runner. And as Killian said, it says a lot about what is their attitude to the office.
Are they not seeing it as important? I mean, this is the president of Ireland. Like, ultimate ambassador for the country.
Yeah. In one stage, they would criticise Michael D. Higgins over many times over his most recent tenure, where they felt he was outspoken or spoke too loudly about certain issues like housing, and said that is inappropriate. It's an abuse of the office. But it's an abusive enough they don't even want, it appears, or treat seriously enough that they feel they should have their own person in there. So what? Maybe that shows the lack of power really in it, if they feel that they don't want it. But I think it's a really sad state of affairs for that we don't have, like you see in New York, when obviously a huge population of the city, but like Zoran Mamdani coming out of nowhere to be like clearly a political force, but not even beyond that, just a leader, societal leader.
Yes,
is what they need.
But so, like, the texts are coming in thick and fast here. We are too small a country to need a president, someone says. Someone else says, Michelle, what about Bertie for president?
Well, there you go.
That's not the first time Bertie's name has been mentioned now.
But I suppose Bertie has mentioned his name. The question is Micheál, you know, but it's the question, it's the decision of the Fianna Fáil party and the leader of the Fianna Fáil party. And I'm not sure, you know, that it actually does come up in the papers as well, whether or not he would be happy to run. Because I think there's...
He would get an independent. If he went four councils, he would get... He selected the right ones, he would probably need to go to four, and I'd say he would get it.
And he'd get it, yeah. The other name that I hadn't heard before today, Michelle, is Niall Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Could be just the Oireachtas ticket for Fianna Fáil. This is in the Irish Times today.
Yes, it is. There's a story in the Irish Times that Miriam Lord has a story about Niall Quinn. I think it was a golf tournament, and there was a mention of disco pants in there. But it seems to be potentially, if Fianna Fáil can't come up with their own, I suppose, political candidate, that Niall Quinn is being mooted now. I'm not sure myself. I suppose he does have the name. recognition as, you know.
What does he, like, I think what people want in a president clearly is someone who stands for something. That's what we've had now with Mary Robinson, Mary McAleese.
He's much loved, you know, and very well respected. You know, there's nothing not to like about Niall Quinn, you know.
No,
but is he the right man for the president of Ireland?
Well, we don't know. He's attached himself to a lot of charities and done philanthropic work, but I can't pin down now what he stands for. I've seen pictures of him in the paper, you know, being the front person of some sort of, and this is how the fact I'm blanking on that shows how little it's resonated, but he doesn't really, what's he stand for? And I think you do need to stand for something. That's why people romp behind, that's why Michael D. Higgins romped home last time. They felt he stood for something.
No, the arts, culture, away, you know what he represents. Yeah.
And like Mary McAleese, and they also have like human rights and progressive society. And I think that's clearly what, and that's served us quite well as a country to have that figurehead, because like that's what I think what we're liked as a country for worldwide is seen as being this fair, fun and, you know, cultural country. People aren't, you know, talking in other countries like Ireland, yeah, and your GDP is, it's brilliant, isn't it? Like, that's not how people look at Ireland worldwide. So some people who are envious of it in political circles are, that's how they look at Ireland. But Ireland's known as a fun, loving country that is the right, feels to be on the right side of societal issues. That's what people
look at. Yeah, and it does no harm to our tourism numbers either, so, you know, to have that perception and that image.
Yeah. I think so. And I don't know if having like an ex-European commissioner in there is the right fit, or someone coming from the law library or barrister going into that from like some Mary Hanafin. I don't know if those are the right fit for the role, but that people will decide.
Well, what about Simon Coveney, Fergus Finlay? These are the names coming in on the text line.
Well, like Fergus, it will be, again, it might be a name that fit. And this thing, maybe these sort of people see I could fit that role. I could, if it's up for grabs, because it definitely is up for grabs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly is. Like, yeah.
We didn't have a proper
president. Other names.
The last presidential was not a serious one. It was so obvious Michael D. Higgins was going to win. He didn't really put a step wrong or trying to push the boat out either. And he just ramped home.
Killian, I'm going to get you to do an explainer on the front page of the Mail, the NTMA in a 5 million scam outrage. This is a government agency duped by voice phishing.
Yeah, so that would be where someone would phone in and essentially pretend to be or masquerade as someone who would be a legitimate client of the business or like even if you're just calling one of us, pretending to be our bank or someone from a local shop where you might have or a local business might have a invoice owed and they have to, and then they masquerade as those. So they would call in, pretend to be a client of the company or someone who you owe money to or have an account with and say, you need to pay this now, and maybe some sort of kind of loose threat, like, oh, if you don't pay it now, you know, I've just given you a heads up, your bill will go up by 10%. So I'm trying to do you a favor here by telling you you need to pay this, or this is late. And you're kind of trying to prey on someone who has access to the cat, who has access to them, in this case, will be like access to the money, but few hoops to jump through to pay it. So they have the actual decision making power. It's mm-hmm. Which is why the text scams to elderly people who have a couple of clicks of a button can send money or can give enough details that it can be extracted if they give across their actual whole a credit card number and the actual security number in the back. Then all of a sudden you can just start buying Amazon or vouchers with that. Then all of a sudden you're extracting the money. It's gone. So with the NTMA, it was specifically the Ireland Strategic Investment Fund. Again, probably an entity not many people are, not everyone's familiar with.
No.
They're essentially a sovereign wealth fund. They get money from the state and they invest the pension money to the state to try and make more of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're investing in the likes of residential companies. They invested in Stripe when they were doing an expansion into, again, all about investing in Ireland. So not investing in a company that's going to invest in necessarily abroad, trying to invest in renewable energy in Ireland. Residential companies coming into Ireland trying to incentivize them, we'll give you investment.
Yeah.
So they would have a huge amount of companies that they would either have recurring investments that go to. You can see where they would have a lot of money that needs to be paid and not necessarily huge sums either. This is
a 5 million scam. This isn't one transaction though. This is obviously a series.
I'm not sure from the piece if it was clear about how many transactions were done, but what it was a transaction. They called in, voice phishing, said you owe us money, and they managed to mock up whatever document would need
this
to be done.
This is frightening.
Or, yeah.
Because I think we're on high alert, Michelle, with texts, aren't we?
We are.
But the voice and the AI is gone so sophisticated now that I think that's really like a new level of frightening in terms of how sophisticated the scams can be.
And, you know, they're not just targeting individuals now. You know, you all get the messages on your phone, you know, on pulse, some sort of deliver, click here.
Yes.
You know, but now obviously they're targeting accounts departments, so they're going to be able to mock up some sort of invoice. As long as they have some sort of a reasonable level of information that will connect to some other business that company has something to do with, or that invoices are work, then that's how you can do it. And I think that's the real challenge. You know, how do we come up with something to combat that?
Yeah.
Or, and you know, and it's like the universities are having huge problems now in terms of, before they go back every semester, the advances in AI in terms of how you're marking students' papers, for example, and challenges all the lecturers face. I think it's probably something we haven't anticipated, but mm-hmm. now accounts departments are going to have to face with the, you know, deal with these challenges as well.
Yeah.
Well, some of this could be based on like they would get intelligence from inside, whatever, maybe nefarious ways they would get intelligence in to say, okay, usually this bill is paid on this date, therefore, and we need to just get them on, okay, look, I know you're about to pay that, but we've had a change in our bank. I'm ringing you on behalf of them to say, this is the account you need to pay it into now.
Yes.
And it would all see, like, it was like, well, that, okay, you're not just saying, you're not just ringing me cold calling on a random mobile number saying you owe me money. You're saying, okay, well, that kind of stacks up. They did say before they're going to change their bank provider. You're now saying that's them, and they're calling us just before we do the payments. So it all things are starting to click.
And that's what I mean, Killian, by how sophisticated it is. And you're right, Michelle, they garner information to the point where they are mirroring or syncing the timing of invoices, the pending changes, and they jump in on that.
And if you don't action it now, there'll be a penalty. And then it'll fall in your head that, oh, you were told, and then the scandal could be NTMA is, if it was a legitimate, it wasn't voice phishing, the scandal could be, well, hold on, a 5 million bills turned out to 5.5 million because you didn't pay on time.
Yeah.
And this person trying to help you is like, oh, you're at risk of overpaying or needing to pay a penalty here if you don't do it now. So they're trying to help you as well by rushing the decision. But it's all about rushing the decision.
It's all about urgency, isn't it?
And
also, I think you can be caught, you know, as a civilian, not even a government agency like that, you know, when you're trying to do five things at once. And suddenly there's an urgency, I have to click on this. And that's when you're caught. And it's not only elderly or vulnerable people. It can be any of us.
Oh, and it could be,
I know tons of people who have clicked on those links.
And it could be €5, a text from Unpus saying you need to pay. It's not Unpus, pretending to be a delivery company saying you need to pay us €5 to release this at the port. And they send that to a million people. If 1% of people then have packages at the port and then 1% of them pay,
A numbers game.
Yeah, you're making money. Like, and that's what it's a numbers game. And but then you would say, oh, I do have a package at the port. Oh, I need that. I need it released. And so it all looks very legitimate. And it leads you to a page that looks like theirs and you just pay very quickly.
Yes.
So this can happen. It doesn't have to be 5 million. It could be €5 and it can happen very easily.
Yeah, it's just a reminder to us all as well to just be so mindful of it. Michelle, let me come to you on Wimbledon. I mean, Wimbledon, obviously, you know, on all week, everywhere, ubiquitous, but it seems to be the style got more attention than the tennis. The celebrity spotting Hugh Grant falling asleep. And there's a water issue now. Tell us about that.
There is a water issue, Anna, as I put it in the Daily Mail. Oh, no. So Wimbledon's official water sponsor, Evian, which was filling the reusable water fonts, and people paid £5 for a reusable Evian water bottle to go and refill it. They ran out of water. I think they used half of the amount of water that Evian had donated them in within the first 2 days of Wimbledon. And yesterday they ran out of water. And this was also supposed to be, rebranding Wimbledon as sustainable, you know, with the reusable water bottles.
Yes.
And they had to fill the fridges with one, you know, single use water bottles to help people cool down. We heard about all the spectators during the week, you know, fainting on centre court during matches. And I think some of the players had to go and hand them their own water. But I mean, the first thing that came to my mind when I read it was, what's wrong with tap water? You know, maybe next year Wimbledon should look at just connecting to the
maybe there are other solutions as well as the kind of showboating of sustainability and then going backwards in the middle of it.
Yeah, but I mean, particularly today and tomorrow, I guess it's not, you know, and Evian say, you know, we looked at the data from last year, but you know, obviously, there's been a heat wave in England for a number of weeks now. You should have been prepared.
But we did know it was coming as well. Yeah. I mean, it's not a surprise.
Exactly. It shouldn't have been a surprise to them. So I guess it's not a good look. We'll see who's providing Wimbledon with water next year. Is it still Evian or will they have a new water
Exactly. Or will there be a new sponsor? Yeah. Plenty of strawberries, no doubt.
Exactly. I would say plenty of strawberries. But you can't beat the Wexford strawberry. So
That's true.
You could say it was naive of Evian, which is Evian's naive spelt backwards.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. It is actually. Look at you, Killian. On the ball this morning.
I was storing that for years. I noticed that years ago. I was like, I'll use that someday.
You finally got your platform for it. Well done, Killian. So the men's final tomorrow.
I'm so out of the loop of Wimbledon.
And the women's final today.
Yeah, the women's final is today.
So is style not always Wimbledon? Is that a new thing that style is a big part
of? I think particularly in the last year, and you know, it's been more about the style than the tennis. Considering when you think of all the shocks, especially in the women's side, all the big names being knocked out in the first couple of days, but that was completely overshadowed by who was wearing what.
Oh, listen, who's Anna Winter sitting beside and they're serving up, pardon the pun, incredible fashion statement looks. Do you know what I mean? So they're filling the pages of magazines with it as well.
I would have put that there with like the races as well as being kind of style. So that's a new trend. I didn't know that. I thought that was always very stylish.
Well, I think there's been a move away from the more traditional Wimbledon look, apparently, according to the papers.
I would agree.
You know, something a bit more colourful and.
Exactly. Yeah, not all white and not all that classic fresh look. Will we jump onto DJ Carey just before we finish up, because this is the story that just keeps on rolling, isn't it? And he had some contact book, Killian.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to see how people just trust sports stars, but are at a different level of trust in sport. I think that's the crux of the story to me, is the different level of trust people have in sports stars and the feeling that there's maybe like
that's classic Ireland, Killian, isn't it?
It is, and it's like there's like a the way people were. It, through the case, like being duped and giving money, is that like a family connection? That they felt this affinity towards them because they had it. Not felt, there was an affinity towards. He was a sports star. He was a representative of his community and he was in need, so they gave him money.
And what is it about sports stars that, you know, we follow, we admire, but we also trust? I mean, this was his thing, do you know what I mean? People were trusting him and he was calling on very wealthy American people that he met at different gala events overseas.
We wrap our emotions up in sports stars' own achievements, which is what we do with family, whether it's academic, whether it's their own family like roaring them on the sidelines. I think that's what it comes down to. We just have this, it's not a wrong feeling, it's the right, because you are emotionally invested in them, because you are pouring your emotion into them, because you care about what happens to them and you want to see, well, they gave me these great days in Croker, they gave me these great days out, I don't want to see them suffer.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't want to see them be in need. So maybe it has to pass a lower threshold and maybe giving money.
Well, yeah, because people, you feel like you know them, even though you don't, particularly like they represent your county, you know, so you feel like you have that connection even if you don't know them at all. And I suppose the other thing that he had then was he had this connection, this book, so he's not doing it just within his own circle, his own village, his whole community, which is why I think it was able to go on for so long, you know, because he did it within the GA community, but I mean like the broader GA kind of community, people from different counties he would have played with. But then, you know, having that, because he was also a successful businessman, so he was invited to these golf tournaments with very wealthy people, and he was able to make those connections and do all of that. And I suppose, and it's just, it goes back to almost the scam thing that, you know, you just, your first thought is not to distrust him. Your first thought is to believe this person and say, well, okay, if you need help, then yes, I will try to help you.
And it's quite incredible how the stories unfolded, the amount of people that gave him, you know, significant sums of money.
Of money, yeah. And what happened to that money, like, we don't know, or it's not clear, but...
It's not clear, is it? Yeah. That was my next question.
Well, it doesn't seem to be clear. Obviously, he used it and either put it into his own company, who knows, but... I suppose what's really sad, you know, people would have given money that they probably, it would have been difficult for them to give away.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. A lot of people gave money who weren't millionaires on the golf course in Texas. And I think that's the really sad thing about it, you know, for those people who really trusted and believed him, gave the money and it turns out they were scammed.
I agree with you. Whatever about people who are well able to give it, it's, you know, local Irish people who, you know, and they hear the story and the trust, the pillar of society, the pillar of community. I am wrapped up in the emotion of that particular win, you know, and they gave so generously. It's actually quite sad when you take the story apart. Killian Woods, Sunday Business Post, and Michelle Murphy, Social Justice Ireland. Thanks very much for giving up your Saturday morning. Go out and enjoy the sun.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.